to the house of ideas. And me, I'm your host with the most. I'm so incredible, hope, yeah. Dance with the devil like Daredevil with no fear. The smoke's here, who the last stand when the smoke clears? The Marvel method, a conversation on Marvel's method. Okay, now on my resume, got a Marvel credit. Yeah, I said it, the method to the people, magnetic. In fact, Magneto was right, don't you people forget it. From Avengers to X-Men, let's talk about it. Chew the fat like a Marvel zombie, put chalk around it. Wakanda forever, woo forever, I'm all about it. So Marvel, you with a friend or two, let's talk about it. So Marvel, you with a friend or two, let's talk about it. So Marvel, you with a friend or two, let's talk about it. Woo forever, I'm all about it. So Marvel, you with a friend or two, let's talk about it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to your favorite rappers podcast. Yes, it's the Marvel Method, and I am your host, Method Man. And I am very excited. You know, I'm always excited about these things because this podcast is dope. But I am very excited to talk to our next guest. But before I do that, I have to mention that normally we'd be in studio recording these conversations. But because of COVID, we decided to play it safe and carry out our conversation over Zoom. Now, back to the festivities. This is going to be fun. All right, we're going to make this fun, Mike. I respect this man so much. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Marvel Method podcast, where our motto is Magneto was right. Let's Magneto get it.
Magneto was right.
Because he was. Now, for those that don't know, Mike made his debut Outkast 2000 LP, Stankonia, later appeared on the Grammy Award-winning song, The Whole World, Grammy album. Let me get to the here, though, because when Mike came back around, because Mike has always been in the game, but Mike has always elevated his hustle to different levels, and when he came back, he released R.A.P. music produced entirely by a rapper and producer, LP. Shout out to LP.
Shout out, L.
And yes, sir. And then you two form this duo, one of my favorite duos right now. You know what I mean? They were signed to Fool's Gold. Ladies and gentlemen, Run the Jewels is in the building. Killer Mike himself. You know I had to bust out the RTJT. I'm repping for you and LP. You already know. Cost me a pretty penny,
too. How many Wu-Tang t-shirts I have worn through in my life. That is a moment for me. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
I am paying it forward, my brother. Listen, yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen. Hey, there you go.
No, listen,
there
you go. I always big up this record, but you don't know. Me and my wife rap. We rap the You and Mary wreck to each other, All I Need. We rap that wreck to each other at least three times a week in the car, blasting insane. So thank you. And I know you wrote an inspiration for your wife. Just thank you for giving that to me and Shay and so many other Wu-Tang fans.
I will take that, my brother. Yes, yes. So, Mike, we always like to start the show the same way, you know, a great comic book, a new superhero starts his story with a great origin story. How did you get into Marvel?
Man, let me tell you, I got to shout out dads out there, right? So, you know, there have been lots of times where I'm in a crowd and I'll see a face, say of within 10 years of us up or down. And then with them, you'll see that face younger on a girl or boy. You're like, this kid obviously belongs to this adult. What in the hell are they doing at a Run the Jewels show? You know what I mean? Or why did they just bop through Wu-Tang and now they're walking over to our stage? And I'm shouting out dads because that's dad stuff, right? So moms do a lot. And oftentimes dads get left out of the have done a lot loop. But dads give you cars, rap music, and comic books. Dads do that. That's dad world. You know, we know about football and baseball and basketball dads, but there are dads that do cars, you know, that do like sneakers, that do music and comics, rap music and comics.
Oh, well into their 50s. Absolutely. Yeah.
Straight up. So I have a bio and a non-bio dad. And my non-bio dad, my dad, it's just, man, he's amazing. So one of my dad's name is Mike. My other dad's name is Tony. And my dad, Tony, he marries my mother. He marries us, essentially. You know, my grandparents are raising me, but all of his model cars, he's just like, I love this kid. If he f***s it up, f*** it. We'll build another model. All his records, once I saw DJ Scratch, I'm like, yo, f*** it. I'm scratching. We did not have a Technique turntable. Yes, I f***ed my dad's turntables up. And he still just let me have my way. And there, right across from the West End Mall, there was a Krispy Kreme donut shop. And there was an old Pulp Fiction bookstore. So, you know, in the 80s, kids, before you just off Amazon, you go to these grimy-ass bookstores that sold Pulp Fiction, like Iceberg Slim, Donald Goins, things of that nature. They sold comic books, and they sold pornography, too. So part of the reason I was even a reader is because I read comics, and my mom caught me reading Playboy. And because I was reading, she was just like, you know,
was this all in the same store? What was it?
Yeah,
the
it was
store
all
in
the same store. So I go in the store, my dad, so it's me and my dad in the store, and he's a comic book head. He's a toy car head. Me and my dad will walk around listening to the show. Well, we ride around listening to the show, rapping it together. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
So he'd be buying, looking at comics. I'd be looking in, you know, in a bookstore, you start reading. And I look up 20 minutes later, and my dad has kind of crept from my side. And I notice dad's probably back in the porn stash, getting some extra Playboys. And he popped back up, and, you know, and I'd end up having picked two or three comics that I liked. And I remember him coming home. I know he had went to the store. He drove trucks. So he'd come in all hours, and he gave me my first Uncanny X-Men.
And that was your intro.
That X-Men. Was my intro. My dad was X-Men. I had read, you know, other comics before, of course. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I was always like a Batman head, for instance. Like when I was young, my mom did my room as Superman. I spazzed out. I was like, I don't like Superman. I want Batman.
Talk about it.
but in matters of the X-Men, and in particular Magneto, that was my intro. And it was just like, it was mind blowing.
That mirrors my own experience the same, because I was, you know, I knew of comic books, wasn't really into collecting, but my real intro, which made me a fanboy, was the X-Men. I love that part of it right there.
There were so many personalities, you could find yourself in them. You know, there are certain stronger personalities that were going to take you there, whether it was, you know, Wolverine or Sabretooth, whether it was, but what kept you was these other auxiliary personalities you found. So most people came for the X-Men, and I would often argue they stayed for Magneto.
Dope. See, for me, it would change every now and then, you know, because X-Men weren't just the core group, which was basically Storm, Colossus. Well, let's say the core group was Beast, Iceman, Angel, Cyclops, right? Later on down the line, you had Wolverine, Colossus, Storm, Banshee.
Oh, you brought back Banshee.
And I know it's James Proudstar's brother, John Proudstar. Thunderbird.
You guys are going full on nerd.
But he died. He died in the debut issue of the new X-Men. You know what I'm saying? So for me, I used to bounce around a lot to, like, sometimes Colossus was my favorite.
Colossus is always a favorite of everybody.
You know what I mean? It just felt like he was the heart of
and
that
nope,
team.
There was a certain nobility with him, even when he switched sides.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Rogue, for instance. I used to, like, when Rogue first joined the team, they gave her hell just to even get down with the team. And it was so, she had like this rough edge about her. And the way they wrote her, it's like she gradually matured in these books, which is like unheard of in comic book lore. Because usually, you know, you got to cram a whole story within a certain amount of pages. Like watching an episode of X-Men, the animated series on TV. They got to get the plot done and wrapped up in 30 minutes.
Yeah,
you know,
Rogue was like a child star that successfully matriculated up. Like,
absolutely. I would put Jubilee in that category also, but Nightcrawler used to stand out.
Nightcrawler was dope, and Storm was dope.
Storm, definitely.
Yeah, Storm. When Storm popped up with the mohawk, when that wasn't the thing, I always thought they kind of did her a disservice making her hair more like long and, you know, basically European-esque. When the mohawk it was just ethnic as and she was like punk and badass. I was a fan of Storm as well.
And that all that happened after the Mutant Massacre, or prior to the Mutant Massacre, when she had that fight with Callisto for leadership of the Morlocks.
The underground, the grimy mutants, the subway.
The grimy ones that couldn't be seen, like they
the
weren't
Wu-Tang
pretty enough.
Of mutants.
talk about it.
That is straight up, straight up.
That whole, I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, if you're a Marvel guy, of course you're going to love Spider-Man. Spider-Man is what it is, you know? It's just like the angst and all that stuff. God, talk about
Spider-Man
it. Be honest, bro.
Spider-Man was just, like, cool to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I like not in a bad way, just Peter wasn't dark enough. There was always a want to do right. And what perplexed me about other characters is there was a fight, you know what I'm saying? And he never really overtly fought that for me, you know what I'm saying?
But he had his trials and tribulations here and there. But I think a lot of the Spider-Man happy-go-lucky stuff came from the series a lot, because a lot of us grew up watching the Spider-Man and his amazing friends, things of that nature. The same thing they did to the Turtles. I mean, but at his core, Spider-Man has always been so very relatable, and the fact that he's from Queens, New York is, you know, a lot of people trip off of that, that alone.
We got to get a comic based out of Atlanta. I'm going to work on it.
That would be dope.
New York has had a monopoly on the illest location forever. We gotta figure something out.
I attribute that to Stan Lee and them having their offices based.
Respect. New York's capital of the world. You can't take that. They gave us hip hop. You'll never get me to talk down. But boy.
Yeah. And I think that separated Marvel from other books, because they were not always grounded in reality, but the places were
real.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if I did a Marvel comic, the Blue Flame would be in there. Definitely would put that strip club. Absolutely. It'd have to be. You know, all the villains would meet at the back of the Blue Flame.
Have you done work for Marvel before? Like, any? I believe you did a collabo with them when they did the covers.
We did four or five covers. I was appreciative. My dad was so stoked, man. Like, I just got to keep shouting my dad out for this. Like, man, Anthony Smith is the man. Like, he,
that's what's up.
You know, nobody lets their kid just fuck up their collection like that. I don't even let my kids touch my sneakers. Like, get out of here.
All right. I feel you on that one, boy. He still reads?
My dad still reads a lot more than me. Like, I'd be slipping because I'd be running and ripping. But my dad literally still buys, reads, collects, buys books for me. Like, I already know what I'm getting for Christmas. It's going to be something by way that's collectible, whether it's comics or cards or cards.
There's no, let's just go back to this X-Men thing, because the way the X-Men was built, which made them different from other comics, I will attribute that to the writer and sometimes creator of certain characters.
Chris Claremont?
Yeah, I mean, the guy, he approached every element of, you know, who these people were from an actor, like an actor, researching who a character is. So there's a lot of character development going on, which is why I feel like a character like Rogue, I watched her grow into the mature adult that she is now. You know, a character like Gambit, who had his moral code was a bit sketchy.
Yeah, he was like Doc Holliday in Tombstone. You never knew which way Gambit was going to go, which is, you know, the symbolism on the card, and you never know. But I always felt like his want to be on the side of good was there.
Yeah, I feel the same. I feel the same way. But then you take a Wolverine, who I feel like is like, you ever had that homie that you know, you're on the road with, and he don't let nobody get next to you. Nobody told him to do it, but he just
that's
like
just
that.
That's just what it is. Absolutely.
Y'all, I'm the gatekeeper. You can't get past me. That's what Wolverine reminds me of. And I think that's why a lot of people relate to that character. But I neglected to ask you, who, if any, is your favorite X-Men character?
Oh, it's Magneto. And like Wolverine and say Storm and Nightcrawler brought me in, but Magneto keeps me. Because he is... I relate to him in being a person of an oppressed ethnicity, right?
Yes, so yes.
When it all made sense when you find out that Magneto had been a child of the Holocaust and that his enduring trauma was that and having survived that. So you begin to understand, because, you know, them saying that they patterned him after Malcolm and Xavier after Martin, you really get to understand that. Even if you look at those two characters as the actual human beings, Malcolm had endured a trauma that Martin, a middle-class black person from Atlanta, had never endured. right? Even though they were both black, even though they had both suffered injustices, Martin was from a middle-class black family. He was educated. He was able to see how the inability of human beings to simply cooperate and collaborate could cause these false in-betweens. And he could see earlier than even Malcolm, right, just the need to get over race and into a humanity. Malcolm had went through some and trauma.
Absolutely.
And,
yes.
and a brutality just untold. And once you get that about Magneto, you start to understand his intolerance for bull. It's not that he hates humans. He understands of our capacity for evil in a much more intimate way than even Xavier does. And only comparably, only probably Wolverine understands what Magneto understands.
And they have compromised on some points at certain times in the books.
Exactly, exactly. So because Wolverine is a product of a government experiment. You know what I'm saying? And the Holocaust, something that times 100 in terms of the brutality and evil. So I really enjoyed understanding as I grow older, my perspective is probably much more to the slant of Magneto.
Stick around, true believers. We'll be back with more Marvel Method after the break. Welcome back, true believers.
I want to bring someone else's perspective in right now. We have a surprise guest right now. I think you're going to enjoy this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Marvel Method Podcast, the Chris Claremont. Let's go.
Oh, it's an honor.
Oh,
how are you, Chris? How you doing during all this heyday and things going on and stuff, man?
Just fine. And hope you guys are as well.
Oh, we definitely are. You know, we want to pick your brain and stuff. You're like George Lucas to us, to Star Wars fans and stuff. You know, it's like family.
Man, I don't have a bunch of minute questions. I got just God loves, man kills. That's that title is that is one of the best rap album titles for a non-rap album I've ever heard in my life. That is. I walk away like, damn, why didn't I think to call my mixtape that?
And,
that's only 40 years old. You still have to.
I know. I could pull it off now. Someone would think it was brand new. But tell them, like, how do you come to doing this one? And how does the world not understand how truly evil Stryker is? And their kind of unified hatred or questioning of Magneto, it seems to me that that human beings are far more dark in these comics than a lot of times we've discussed. Can we talk about not only just how you come to do it, what inspired you, what took you through, but just the depths of evil from humanity's side, which we kind of never talk about as we talk about our favorite or not favorite mutants?
Well, the X-Men have been chugging along at the time quite well. And Marvel had was starting to gear up a graphic novel program. And Louise Jones, now Louise Simonson, who was the editor at the time, and was absolutely brilliant, is absolutely brilliant, and I were talking about what we wanted to do, because we wanted to do an X-Men graphic novel that from the very start would be, if you only had, the premise was, if you could only buy one X-Men book ever in your life, what story would we tell? And
great start.
Weird as it sounds, I was pulling a little bit from my life. And, you know, this is barely 80s. So I came of age, for what it's worth, as an immigrant in the 60s. You know, I remember 68 heartbreakingly, still, both with Martin and with Bobby. And John 4 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get a lot of that out of my system. And as the story evolved, this was the way it was. It came to pass. And the other side of it was, because it was a graphic novel, we weren't limited by the rules of the Comics Code Authority in what we could say and what we could do and how we could present things. And as I said, if this is the only X-Men you were ever going to read, I wanted the readers to understand my perception of what this team, what this book, what these people are all about, and why their struggle, to me anyway, was so important. And in many respects, fundamental. And it starts with an extraordinarily cruel act of terrorism and Magneto's response to it. And it ends with basically Stryker confronting Kitty and pointing to Nightcrawler and saying, "You dare call that human?" Because he looks like a demon, the classic demon. And yet the way that Dave Cockrum and I evolved him in the beginning, he's the most Christian member of the team.
He is a
person of faith.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His attitude is, if I am a creature of God, if God decided that this is how I should look, who am I to complain about it? God is God. I am God's servant. So I'm going to go forth and live according to his or hers or theirs best words. What I ended up to do the story was watch 6 months worth of Sunday morning televangelists who are nowhere near as polished as they become today. But at the same time, I also, for God knows why, read the whole Bible and took notes because I wanted to make sure that if you read the book, you understood where Stryker was coming from and that that his faith to him was a very primal, real, commanding thing.
So sci-fi movies and comic books and illustrated novels have been a very, in the summers when mosquitoes start biting, your grandmother would put a little sulfur in a teaspoon of honey. And the sulfur gets in your blood, and mosquitoes don't like sulfur as much as they like sweet stuff. So you don't get it bitten as much. So the medicine is in the honey. And I've always viewed sci-fi and comics in particular at doing that. 40 years ago, you have the foresight as a much younger man to see the growth, because televangelism was starting to grow. And religious zealotry, we know from novels like The Scarlet Letter and, you know, the Salem witch trials and things, we know that anytime religious zealotry enters too much into humanity's day-to-day actions, that very terrible things can happen. You obviously put a medicine in here, in the description of Stryker, and yet 40 years removed, whereas in I read these things or saw these things or experienced these things, your books, Planet of the Apes, things of that nature, they made me more and more, even the music I listened to, whether it was KRS-One or Woo, something was in there that grew me and grew the humanity in me. Whereas in I feel like 40 years later, all the kids who didn't read comics or watch sci-fi are the people now married to the mythology of religious books and promoting war and killing people because of them. So do you feel like sometimes mission failed? You know what I mean? I wanted to ask you frankly, because all creators want to inspire, I think, better, or feel like our ambition is. Do you think that somehow people didn't get it? Because we're not the only ones who grew up reading this, and yet certain messages seem to have stuck with us better than the people who are currently running the world.
Well, the interesting thing is I was just listening to a piece on NPR where they're talking about Aaron Sorkin's film, The Trial of the Chicago Seven, and remembering what happened in Chicago 40 plus years ago, and thinking we're going around the same circle again on a political basis. Where nobody's listening to each other. Everybody's yelling. One side is threatening the other side with guns. The other side is trying to figure out how to respond to that, I suppose. And there's no way of predicting where we will go in 3 weeks, let alone 30 years. But I guess my goal as a writer then, and hopefully now, is to just keep throwing
stories and lessons and people, which is to me the most important thing. If you don't look at the people in this book, I mean, it starts with Kitty having a fight with a classmate at dance class because of the things he said, because he believes in the Stryker crusade. And Stevie Hunter, the teacher, who is a person of color, does the adult thing. You know, the kid was a mutie, and Stevie was saying, come on, be a grown-up, don't react to that. And Kitty's response is the N-word. If he called you that, how would you react? And we talked about it a lot back then because was it an appropriate thing to say? For no other reason than I'm not Black. I mean, was it appropriate?
I've always thought art and writers were braver then. So I'd like to say 40 years removed from that, I am better for having read that question or having heard on the George Jefferson episode where he saves the KKK member and that man used where I'm stronger for having said the word. And I don't mean just in our raps, but in acknowledgement that this is a very real thing. People have to remember that we're only at that point 10, 12 years into a fully integrated society, supposedly. And this is the same year my mom moves to a suburb of Atlanta. I have, you know, a white neighbor 2 months, and then my two friends just disappear forever, you know? So they're still very turbulent times. It's just an undercurrent of. So the heaviness of the word needs to be felt in order for us to progress. And that's not trying to get you to say something that'll get you in trouble or canceled these days.
Oh,
just
no, no.
Just me saying that I have to acknowledge that it helped me be more mature.
Well, no, trust me, there are a lot of... Sadly, we're very good as a species at creating insults.
Yeah.
Cruel insults.
Yeah.
And it's just... But the point here was that for the scene was that Kitty says it right there. You know, if he called you that, how would you react? And runs away. Because the point is she's 13. Mm-hmm. She's reacting with her gut, not her brain. And, you know, Peter Colossus calms things down and they walk away. But then there's this two-panel moment where Stevie's watching them all go. And what her thought is, she's right. Because I'd have punched him in the face if he'd said that to me. And the hope was to try and draw commonalities, human commonalities, between all these people that we are generally used to thinking of as creatures in costumes. Mm. And to confront both Charles and Magneto with the question, which one of us really is right in our quest? You want to build bridges, but they don't. And I want to just punch them in the nose. You'd ever think that I may have the right idea? And at the end, again, Charles Xavier, who we're used to thinking of as Mr. Perfect, and always being portrayed as Mr. Perfect,
starts
and
to question.
The essence there, and the essence there is that Scott and Aurora are the ones who stand up and say, "No, we have hope. You have given us hope. The most important thing is to have hope. Is to look at our better natures." Keep our fingers crossed and keep moving forward. Because if we yield, if we just give up, then all the things that are being said and done in this election season that are negative may well come to pass.
Yeah.
And that should not be the state for anyone.
Yeah,
I agree.
And yes, that's me being an idealist and a dreamer, but hell, I write comic books.
I love that right there.
I find it so encouraging that I've suspected right, that dreamers write comic books and raps and movies and things.
And the bottom line of that whole thing right there is what I say at the top of the show. Magneto was right. I don't care what anybody says. Fight me. Magneto was right. Look, see, Chris, this is what we're here for.
No, because the whole point for me was to come around to the situation 6 or 7 years later, because the whole point for me when I started was Magneto had always been presented as a very two-dimensional character. I mean, what sort of idiot runs a group called the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants? I mean, yeah, it looks great on a bumper sticker, but why is he who he
is?
And that's where Dave and I went back and created a reality of him that he is a product of the Shoah. You know, the one, to me anyway, event in modern human history that is as reprehensible and unforgivable in its own way as slavery, as the transportation of Africans to North.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be forgiven because there's nothing you can take back about it. These people are dead. These people were brutally slaughtered without mercy. Therefore, you know, we have to find a way to learn from that experience. But Magneto's way of dealing with it is the only thing people will understand is brute force. Therefore, I will present it to them. But each time, because of the comics code and publishing reality, he tries, he has to lose.
Mm.
At which point Charles says, try another way, and blackmails him, in effect, to become
the headmaster of the school. Yeah.
And this is where, because for me as a dramatist, he's a so much more interesting and challenging character than in Xavier. Xavier's perfect. All you can do is diminish him, whereas Magneto is this flawed hero. And I'm sorry, from Shakespeare on down, flawed heroes are more fun and so much more challenging and so much more rewarding because they can go to the edge of disaster and you're terrified, will they step over or will they come back? And for me, that's what made him such a rich and necessary character, because he was the alternate side of the question, but could he not learn? I mean, if you look at Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, there was an evolution, both of them, away from the purity, what we perceive as the purity of their original direction. It didn't quite work the way they thought, so they were trying to evolve into something new. And the heartbreak is they were both cut down before they got there. But for me, as a writer and as a person, the whole point is to find, pompous as it may sound, to try and find a better way to show through how the characters interact and how the characters can grow. Maybe the readers will get the same idea. And what always made the X-Men important to me was that they weren't heroes in the sense that Iron Man is a hero. And the joy of working at Marvel is the ability to grab hold of these people and make them as real as possible, so that when you read it, the audience is right in there. Absolutely. With the characters. It's like going to a concert and yes, we're down in the audience cheering and pounding and having a great time, but there's a part of us listening to the music and watching the performer on the stage that wants to be, imagines themselves being right up there by the performer's side, embracing the music, embracing the action, and projecting it out in ourselves and out to the world.
I think that was the beauty of your writing, because character development was very key, in my opinion, in a lot of your stories. It's like, we would have to go all the way from Queens to Brooklyn to get to A to B, but the journey was worth it by the time you get to B. And I commend you for that, sir. Yes, sir.
Let's continue. Brooklyn's far more fun. I'm sorry. It's just, I'm prejudiced.
Yeah, I get it, man. I mean, you wrote for years on that book, so you've earned every right to, I mean, a lot of those characters you absolutely created, and you've earned the right to do whatever the hell you wanted with them. But you always, I think you connected with the fans in a whole different kind of, because we knew who these characters were because of the way you wrote them. So if there was ever a time where somebody came in and went, let's say off script, for lack of a better term, the fans would call them out on it. That's not the way Claremont would do it.
Oh, that's right. They call me out on it just as emphatically.
Absolutely. So when you're writing, is it like, do you build the world that you want to put them in first? And then as far as characters, how each character would relate to this situation in this world? I mean, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, is basically what I'm saying.
Well, the difference between Marvel and DC in those days is that Stan decided, why invent all these fake cities? We'll use the real world. Everybody lives in New York. Why do they live in New York? Because you can go around the world just by going from neighborhood to neighborhood. If you cross the river to Brooklyn, it's not only a different reality, but between Park Slope and Midwood and Diker Heights, forget it. You can hit every culture on earth.
And if you are a seasoned New Yorker, you know exactly who lives in what neighborhood by the smell of the food that you're walking around. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm in Hell's Kitchen right now. Of that nature.
Well, but remember when Hell's Kitchen used to be scary and not middle class? I mean,
well, you know.
Holy cow. But all I have to do is give a character description to an artist, and we're off and running. But if we actually take the real world and use that as a frame for the excitement and the silliness that happens in superheroes, that's fun. But at the same time, real life isn't always a happy ending, and it isn't always an easy conflict. But if we can take some of that and put it into these books and try and find a way not to guarantee the happy ending, but to show the growth in our heroes. We made a mistake, but we must learn from that mistake. And if we just look at people as cliches and not as people, things can
continue
happen.
To happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And that it's, I mean, to me anyway, coming out of the history I did, coming out of the era I did, you know, there's got to be a better way. We have to, you know, there has to, why is it so much harder to come out and say, so why did you say that? Let's have a talk. Yes, that sounds like a cliche, but who knows?
A lot of invisible walls are built and no one's willing to cross the line. Well, some are, but sometimes even when you're willing to cross the line, you have to have somebody that's willing to listen.
But the point, I guess, is to keep trying. You know, you don't know what you'll learn. And the beauty of doing something like the X-Men all those years is, as Archie Goodwin...
Shout out, Big Archie.
But as Archie put it, okay, you screwed up.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Claremont, I love that.
Chris,
that's a great
before you go, I am the second Michael. The first Michael is my bio dad, Michael. So he's Mike, I'm Michael, and there's a 13-year-old girl named Michael Marie who we call Mikey. She already illustrates. She has a brilliant mind on her. But if you had any advice to give to her as an illustrator or a story writer or an artist, I'd just like for you to say that, because this will make me the coolest dad in PTA, and no one will be able to top that.
The best thing to say is find your own voice. Find the stories within you that you want to bring to life with your talent. And if you're going to be an artist, in any sense of the word, the reason for finding your own voice is that it's you. Good, bad, indifferent, success or failure, it's yours. It's honest. It can't be copied. And see where it leads. You know, ideally to the top of the heap, but you have to be truest to yourself and be prepared for the fact that most writers, most artists do their best work between 1 and 5 in the morning. You know, and best of luck. And I guess always approach it with, anything
absolutely.
You can do.
I'll make sure. I'm going to make sure she sees this as well.
Well, you just have to keep looking over your shoulder.
I told her at her age, in terms of drawing, she's light years ahead of me already. And I'm, And she's probably 1 year of school away from being far more intelligent. Right now, I got her on. I know a few hooks and crooks from the high school era that she doesn't, but she'll be in high school next year, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to catch up. These kids are brilliant.
You'll have to up your game.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Chris, again, thank you for your time, sir. You were more than gracious with us.
For being kind enough to invite me. This has been a real treat.
Hats off to you, brother. I don't take my hat off for nobody, man. I mean, you were instrumental in my childhood, and you are the reason I am a big fan of comic books today, sir. X-Men forever.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry.
Yes, I've spent millions of dollars on these books, Chris, and trying to find back issues of yours. If you have anything laying around that you might want to sign, you know, I'm available, bro. Please believe it. All right.
Cosign,
Mike, too. From two of your biggest fans. Chris, thank you again, sir.
Thank you. That, now I'm going to blush. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Ow, that was amazing.
That was so tight. Mike, man.
Listen, man, I just want to take some time to praise you. I appreciate you. I appreciate the Woo.
Thank you, brother.
All y'all have brought during that rap music album, that Rebellious African People's Music album. It was the GZA that took me out on tour. You know what I mean?
Wow.
It was him that, you know, took a Wu-Tang fan out on tour and told me all these dope ass stories that other people had to wait for a television show to see. So I'm just indebted to you as a member of that crew. I honor and praise y'all always. And this being on here with you, you know, nerding out over comic books, talking to Chris, has meant a lot more in a turbulent 2-3 weeks of working.
I can imagine.
I just love and respect and appreciate you. And my wife and I are going to keep jamming the out of you.
I love it.
You're rapping it to each other like two drunk homeboys in the club.
Yes, love to you and your beautiful family. And look, I'm ready. I got you all in my iTunes, bro.
Come on, man. That's love.
We spend
money.
We applaud excellence here, my brother. Please believe that, man.
I just want to say that a big part of the reason I'm here is because the people that mentored me were people that had knowledge of self, knowledge with understanding. Members of the Nation of Gods and Earth. So your music passed just jam factor. There's the spiritual ideology, the things that you guys put out to create the why in my mind is a big part of the reason I am the man I am. So, you know, when people like you, when people like Ice Cube, when people like KRS-One, when people who gave a bunch of kids in America during the height of some of the most cracked, wild, and violent times gave us something to aspire to our higher self, it meant the world. So a product of that is the man that serves, you know, the world. And that means a lot more than just having fun to the music, because you edutained me and you woke up my curiosity. So thank you.
Well said, my brother. Ladies and gentlemen, my brother, and hopefully yours after y'all hear this interview, Killer Mike, Run the Jewels new album is in stores right now. Nothing but bangers, headbangers on there. And hopefully when the country opens back up, you can see these guys live. They really put on. Shout out to LP.
And Greenwood Bank. That's another cool thing we got coming for people who work their butt off. Like for people from working class neighborhoods like the ones we grew up in, check cash and places and liquor stores.
Yeah.
Have taken a huge gouge. You know, if you take a single mother, for every $100 she makes, she has to give 20 cents to a check cashing place on every dollar. That's $20 on every 100. A working class father. This, with Greenwood Bank, it gives you an opportunity to have an account so that your bank is now in your hand and you don't have that worry. And it's specifically geared toward Black people in the Latinx crowd. They make sure that your transactions help things like United Negro College Funds, NAACP, and I just think that those are important things. Politics aside, socially, Black people got to take care of each other. And, you know, I'm going to keep doing my best to support efforts, whether it's Cripple Cola and Blood Pop or Greenwood Bank or my swag shops or me and Tip owning Bankhead Seafood. We're going to try to work our butt off to keep being the best we can possibly be.
That's a beautiful thing, brother. One more time, let them know what this is.
Greenwood Bank, man. And it's named after Greenwood in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that was destroyed during the Tulsa, Oklahoma race massacre. We took the spirit of that place where a dollar in the Black community at that time turned 36 times before it left. 36, 360. Turned 360 times before it got a chance to get out of its own cipher and then help the wider community. So what we have an opportunity to do is take that same spirit to the Bronx, to Staten Island, to Long Island, to Brooklyn, Harlem, Queens, Atlanta, Jacksonville, Tampa, Inglewood. We take that same spirit and use our dollar in the same way And that way we're growing business people and entrepreneurs, not just, you know, we love singing and dancing, but past that, we have become businessmen, fathers, leaders,
yes,
and teachers. And I think that we can grow a lot of that. And y'all ain't even got to sing and dance and have good rhythm to do it. All you got to do is save your money, take care of yourself and your greater community.
Words to live by, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, Killer Mike, thank you for joining us on the Marvel Method, man. Keep it going,
love,
boy.
Man, run the jewels. Love, man. Love, brother.
Appreciate you, brother.
Love respect, and respect,
man.
Always. Absolutely. Love.
Hey, what can I say? Killer Mike, man. I mean, who better than Killer Mike to wrap up the season, you know, with a nice bow, a Killer Mike bow, you know, and then the icing on the cake. Chris Claremont, the GOAT himself, drops by to talk shop with both of us. I mean, me and Mike have a kindred thing going on because we're both Magneto guys, you know, and you guys know how I feel about Magneto. So that's where we meet at. Kindred spirits right there, you know what I'm saying? And then the icing and cherry on top of the cake. Chris Claremont himself drops by to drop jewels on me and Killer Mike. No pun intended, but he dropped jewels on us. And I mean, to be a kid, they say never meet your heroes. And Chris was one of my heroes. I have to disagree. The guy was very cool about it. He gave us a lot of knowledge. And at the end of the day, I think the fans, you, yes, you, the listeners, I think you guys won. For real. And if you guys enjoyed it and you want to make sure you get more, we need you to rate and subscribe. Hell, share with a friend or two. Marvel Method, man. Also, I'd like to thank my crew, all the people that made this thing happen. You guys are the best. Marvel Method is a co-production of Marvel and SiriusXM. The executive producers are Cliff Method Man Smith, Jill Duboff, and Harry Goh. Shauna Garr is our creative producer. This episode is produced by Jorge Estrada. Brad Barton is the development manager, and Patrick Kottner is the talent producer. The show is mixed by Cedric Wilson of Lantigua Williams & Co. Music written by Clifford Smith and produced by Rockweiler and Leon Lacey. Special thanks to Sarah Amos, Dan Buckley, Daniel Fink, Ricky Purdon, Joe Quesada, Shane Romani, Ron Richards, Larissa Rosen, and Steve Wacker.